Welcome to episode 472 of Troubadours and Raconteurs, with yours truly, E.W. Conundrum Demure. On this week's episode, we feature a very introspective, provocative conversation with poet, librarian, aspirant, Buddhist, among other things, V.J.R. Nathan. We talk with V.J. about the journey of a hero, dreams, growing up in Staten Island, Johnny Depp and Winona Ryder, Queens Public Library, becoming abundant, visiting India and Thailand, Jung, aligning in one's own psyche, and knowing the pivot line, among other things. A wonderful conversation with V.J.R. Nathan this go-round. We have an EW essay titled Wednesday. We share an excerpt from an article titled Heroes, written by David Remnick, published in the May 9th, 2022 edition of The New Yorker magazine. We have a poem called Two Bushes. And of course, all of this will be infused, imbued with the wonderful energy of several great tunes. It is so nice to be with you. Let's get to it then. Episode 472 of Troubadours and Raconteurs.
Tick all your boxes and turn back the clocks. Straighten the crooked, pull out all the stops. I'll be there doing it for you. Save all the best parts of me just for you.
Thank you.
Wednesday. Here I am today. You two, right there. My ancestors were coal miners and farmers, at least as far back as I know. They must have been philosophers and artists by nature and heart. I stand here in this land, and ahead and above, the incandescent can't hold a candle to the moon. I notice this none too soon. The sun is up, and I am in nirvana. Thus, what more can I say? Today, the procreant urge of today. I was talking to this man. I think it was Wednesday. He was putzing around his short front lawn. His garage door was open, revealing his junk. Old, stuffed boxes. A Chevy Nova with an STP bumper sticker, the band. Gold and silver tinsel hanging from a few rafters, shelves. I was walking by listening to the late morning birds and to gunfire echoing off the mountain sides from the gun range the cops use for practice and, I presume, fun. His name, this man, is Sandy. He prefaced telling me it by noting it is a girl's name. He explained to me that the helicopter we were seeing fly up alongside the West Mountain and back down, with a big oblong vessel hanging from it on a long cable, was picking up water from Summit Lake just up the hill to dump atop a wildfire on the other side of that tectonic, weather-carved and worn, tree-covered cascade of rolling and steep green, brown, and light yellow. I could see the smoke intersperse with calm, white, and gray-hued cumulus. He asked if it was okay to give my friend, a chocolate lab named Katie Girl, a handful of treats poured from an old peanut butter jar off a wooden shelf next to a strand of gold tinsel. I said, sure, she loves snacks. Soon, after shaking hands, I turned into the road ahead and showed him my back as me and Katie Girl strolled back into the sway.
Sophie Magdalena,
Hello, Vijay R. Nathan, is that you?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you so much for being on Troubadours and Rock on Tours.
Thank you for having me.
Before we get started, let me share a little background with the listeners. Vijay R. Nathan is a librarian and poet living in Rockaway Park, New York City. He is the head librarian of the Christine Mann Library in the C.G. Jung Center in Manhattan, New York. He is currently a master's student in Naropa University hybrid online program for clinical mental health counseling with a focus on transpersonal mindfulness-based approaches to therapy. His third poetry collection has been published by Poets of Queens Press in December 2021 and is entitled Breakdown Dancer. Previously, he independently published Escape from Samsara in 2016, a collection of personal poems, and Celebrity Sadhana, or How to Meditate with a Hammer, the Paparazzo Poet Meditations Book One in 2018. A partially satirical, partially contemplative examination at fictional moments in the lives of celebrities. He enjoys exploring Buddhism, consciousness studies, and internet culture, and is soon ending his almost 5-year broadcast of the Truth to Power show that airs on the great radio station Radio Free Brooklyn. It's a pleasure to have Vijay R. Nathan on the program. So thank you so much again. And we're kind of like colleagues, though we never really met because we both produce shows for Radio Free Brooklyn.
Yeah, yeah. Sometimes they have meetups, but we hadn't really spoken or connected as much as I would have liked. Yeah.
Same here, but hey, there's always the future.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
So let's get into it. Poetry is a big part of what you do. What you love, and you have 3 books of poetry. Let's talk a bit about the personal poems you write. You know, the one book I mentioned, Escape from Samsara, and also Breakdown Dancer, your most recent one, just published last December. Personal poems, I mean, what do you mean by personal poems? How personal do they get?
Yeah, I mean, I now see it as following a mythologizing, a personal mythology. So in other words, I'm examining my life and then through the lens of kind of that mythopoetic, kind of looking at it in the sense of archetypes and, you know, looking at it in terms of the journey of a hero. So I try to examine memories, visions and dreams. Sometimes I'll look at dreams and I'll actually transcribe them, you know, in the sense of capturing it as closely as I can to what the actual dream came up to me as it arose to me for me. And sometimes I'll take a memory and just kind of frame it in a way that gives it some context in the life journey. So some of the poems are each of these examples of some of the different poems I've written, both Breakdown Dancer and Escape.
And you know, let me ask a little bit more. Are you a native New Yorker? Were you born?
Yes. I was born in Staten Island.
Staten Island. And you know, what in that experience as a younger person do you think got you into poetry?
Yeah, I mean, I think in high school and senior in high school, I was friends with this young woman, a classmate, who was really into like American, 19th century American poetry, like, you know, Whitman, Emily Dickinson, you know, William Carlos Williams, 20th century. I think it's like 19. Anyway, the point is, 19th century and then into 20th century, like E. Cummings, all this kind of stuff. So I became kind of interested and I started to write poetry as a young person going to college. So it's like as in Dead Poets Society, they say that we write poetry to woo women.
Right. That's what I was thinking. Maybe this woman you mentioned, you kind of fancied.
Yeah, she's a good friend of mine.
And William Carlos Williams, all of those that you mentioned, I love them all. I remember when I was younger, William Carlos Williams resonated with me for some reason. Still love him. And, you know, you mentioned a little bit about the celebrities, you know, looking at the lives, the fictional moments in the lives of celebrities, and kind of building off of that. It makes me think about the whole Johnny Depp case right now. Is that good fodder for what you're talking about?
Yeah, I haven't been keeping as close touch in this particular trial now, but I did feature Johnny Depp in the collection Celebrity Sadhana for a couple of poems in his relationship to Winona Ryder. So, you know, I was focused on Winona Ryder, but then, you know, in relationship to that, Johnny Depp came up. So I was exploring like Winona Ryder's dream, anxiety dream, where she's kind of like examining her life in relationship to her kleptomania, in relationship to the story around her stealing something from Saks Fifth Avenue. So that story was fodder for that poem. You know, I kind of was examining her anxiety dream around that incident in her life. And then Johnny Depp comes in as a Saks Fifth Avenue guard and, you know, hijinks ensue and all this kind of stuff. And so it was an interesting exploration. It was like a way for me to get into the collective unconscious, as Jung would put it.
Right.
Like how we all connect and how we all kind of resonate with each other's stories, and how I was able to even get into some of my own anxieties about relationships and around, you know, the spotlight. So that was like a way for me to transfer. They call it transference in therapy, when you like transfer over your emotions to a vehicle that is a little bit more, you know, accessible for common, you know, in this case, accessible to the common reader.
It's so important, so important. And, you know, your role and your I guess your day job, I don't know if that's the right way to put it, as head librarian of the Christine Mann Library, and that's at the Jung Center in Manhattan. That must be a fascinating position to have, especially given your love of the written word.
Yeah, I was so glad to be able to align my interest in psychology, my interest in consciousness studies with the actual job, because I was working for 15 years for the Queens Public Library when I came out of graduate school. And I also did a master's in library science. I didn't mention that. But I did a master's in library science at St. John's. And then 15 years I worked at Queens Public Library, and then I was interested in shifting my focus to psychology again. It was something that really inspired me in college and even as reading as an independent reader in graduate school. So therefore I was able to see this opening, and it was just really like a fortuitous moment for me where alignment, where I was able to then continue to pursue the master's of clinical mental health counseling, as well as get some more like inspiration and inspire analysts in training and people who are in psychology, students who are interested in exploring the mysteries of the mind.
Yeah, and you know, when I hear what you are sharing and I look at the things that you've done up to this point, it leads me to believe that you're not doing all this to try to, you know, become financially rich. Maybe rich in another way, it seems, or you're trying to just understand self and humanity or beyond humanity.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. I think there's a sense of, like, when it comes to life mission, you can't be doing it for an exterior goal. You know, you can't be doing it for, like, I'm going to, you know, it has got to be interior goals. I mean, like, internal goals. You know, like, I want to feel a certain way. I want to produce and even that, there's like a whole study around like manifestation work and how you align yourself with your environment. Where is the environment? It's really like within you, and your own alignment, your own tuning of your own self is really how you become abundant. And when you have that feeling of abundance, you don't have to have external, circumstances you're not chasing after external circumstances. They'll align themselves when you are aligned yourself, you know?
Oh, definitely. I mean, you're sounding very much like, a Buddhist right now to me.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. I've learned a lot from Tantra, from Vajrayana Buddhism, from Mahayana Buddhism. Vajrayana being like, in Tantra, they have the imagination. And you imagine the results. You imagine yourself at the result, which is, total enlightenment. You got to bring that bliss of enlightenment into the path right now, so then you're able to, like, get through the day-to-day, because you're bringing the result into the process, you know?
Bringing the result into the process. Explain that a little bit more to me.
Yeah, basically it's like You know, like, for example, like if I were to have the agenda, which is part of my agenda, but exercise, and, you know, I want to have a very muscular body, right? So I'm like thinking to myself, what does that bring me? What would that feeling that having muscles would bring me? And being able to sit with that and kind of bring that into my awareness now, that now I have that mentally, imagining in your imagination, I have that big house, I have that nice car, I have that wonderful mate, whatever it is that you want, whatever it is that desires come up every day for chasing after things. But instead of chasing after it externally, you're kind of bringing that feeling that accompanies that result into the path right now.
When you reference Buddhism in the notes you sent me as Western Buddhism, do you differentiate between Western Buddhism and Eastern Buddhism in your experience, in your mind?
Well, my experience has been that the way it's presented is slightly different. There is difference in the traditions. So in the traditions, when I've gone to India and I've gone to Thailand, those are the two Mahayana monasteries I visited to receive some teachings. The practitioners, they have a different approach. So I do find that the tradition has kind of, the tradition of Buddhism has kind of retransplanted itself in the West, in Zen and in Mahayana Nyingkapa and Kanampa traditions. So there's some specific traditional lineages that have kind of configured some of the teachings for more of a Western mindset. So I think, like, for me at least, I kind of got turned off to like the Hindu kind of Eastern Buddhism or like Vedantic traditions that I was exposed to growing up. And I became more enamored with kind of Western viewpoints because I'm born here and raised here. And, you know, I feel like, you know, the Western mindset is more acclimatized to me.
Is it a bit too that the, and maybe this is what you're saying to a certain extent, the Eastern thinking is a little bit more antiquated, to put it nicely, in terms of how it might look at women or how it might look at, you know, even like castes or classes and things like that?
Yeah, I mean, there's elements of that in both Western and Eastern traditions and as far as like civilizations go in time. You know, when we go back and even go now, even today in America, you know, when we think about like the right Christian, the ultra right or the evangelical Christian tradition has its own problems. But I think specifically in regards to Eastern and Western, Eastern tends to be a little bit more there's certain aspects of the practice and the presentation that are more bhakti devoted, like bhakti or devotional. Which I'm not so, I mean, I find like Western traditions tend to be a little bit more intellectual. They tend to be a little bit more kind of cerebral, mm-hmm. which I understand a little better. I acclimate to a little better. And they try to tailor that cerebral kind of more intellectual kind of pseudo-academic, almost academic kind of presentation of the Dharma in a way that is like relevant to kind of this hyper attentive based, you know, hyper kind of internet-based society we live in, and which is not to say the East, I mean, the East now is becoming like Westernized. There's no mm-hmm. East-West differentiation now. It's almost like the East is becoming the West. It's all really arbitrary. But just, I'm not living in Thailand, so it's difficult for me to, like, you know, use the same modalities that a Thai monk would use with Thai people because they just have a different routine and a different understanding. They do chanting, bhakti movements, as I said, like devotional. And I think in the West, you do more cerebral, as I was saying, yeah.
I hear you. And I have a regular contributor on the program. We call him Almighty Todd, and he's up in Vermont. He has a dojo. He's a sensei, Aikido. I think I pronounced it, I put the accent in the wrong way, but you know what I'm talking about, Aikido?
Yeah, I know. There's so many different traditions where they have like the body, involving the body with Tai Chi, and there's a Korean... Korean Zunmundo, which I did in Korea, I did a weekend. It's so difficult. It's like a combination between yoga and Tai Chi, mm-hmm. which is very challenging. But that's also a modality that has become incorporated in among the West, and you know, as incorporated in the Far East as well, in Japan and Korea and China. You know, they've gone into more physical. I mean, yoga, obviously, in India, but in Buddhist practice, I mean, they got into all this, yeah.
Well, the reason I brought up Almighty Todd is he often sort of criticizes, to a certain extent, the Western mentality with regard to, well, within the context of Zen in particular, and how there's this thing he would call Zen sickness, where people often will use meditation or this idea of Zen to avoid dealing with real issues in their life. And that's not a healthy thing, not a healthy approach. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes, yes. I know what you mean. It's like the concept of the analogy I've heard is reading the medical instructions as opposed to taking the medication, like, or drink the tea, taste the tea, drink the tea. Like, in other words, like there's a, you're reading about something, but you're not actually practicing it. Just like when you drink the tea, it's like it has its effects on your body and mind. So you have to actually do the practices in order to, and avoid over-intellectualizing to the point where you're just becoming like using it as an intellectual weapon. Of course, that's the danger of that kind of pivoting to that point where it becomes just an intellectual chewing gum.
Right.
So that's something I understood, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, even when you read the Tao Te Ching, you see it often referenced, you know, shutting off your mind, so to speak, you know, or words, you know, having such a limit to them when you're trying to understand the way. And that always makes me reflect about the cerebral extent to which I exercise or I try to process what Buddhism is or Taoism is. And I guess there's a crossover there to a certain extent, Buddhism and Taoism. I don't know if you're into Taoism much.
I haven't done too much exploration of that, but I'm starting to now. But one thing I would say is that in my writing, though, I ultimately end up taking, you know, what's most immediate to me, my own life, and kind of digesting it through the lens of the teaching so that then I can like be in relation to myself and my memories in a way that's what I believe produces the best results, which is ultimately therapeutic in a way, and modeling this kind of relationship for my digestion of memories and how it's presented. So ultimately, I'm a big advocate for therapy. Of course, I'm going into the mental health counseling degree because I'm a big advocate for therapy and I've gone to therapy for many years. And I think that the therapy process is something everyone can benefit from, giving space to one's emotional life and giving space for discussion, giving space of the emotions with the professional.
So you'd be more probably into a Jungian approach coupled with mindfulness, transpersonal mindfulness, as you described it.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what I'm hoping to continue to study, and like how we can relate with oneself in the terms of being the hero of one's own life. And that's ultimately my process and what I like to share with others.
You're listening to Troubadours and Rock on Tours with E.W. Conundrum Demure on WFTE Radio, Mount Cobb and Scranton, Pennsylvania. Community radio at its finest.
You know?
The hero of one's own life. Is that what you said?
Yeah. There's the Campbellian, Joseph Campbell wrote about that, the hero with a thousand faces. And that has to do with, it connects back to Jung in the sense that, like, looking at one's life in terms of the hero's journey.
Yeah, you know, you're bringing up some of my favorite people, Jung and Joseph Campbell. I remember when I was a youngster, you know, maybe 18, 19, the quote, follow your bliss, was first presented to me. And that was a Joseph Campbell insight. You're really into some great stuff. I think you must have a healthy way of processing the day-to-day, because, God, you know, we all need that for sure. It's difficult, especially in the world we live. You know, you wanted to talk a bit about pop culture. Our popular culture here in the Western world, do you think it adds to our struggle, or does it help us with the struggle of just being alive?
Yeah, I mean, in the sense of, like, as an artist, I comment on, and I'm in dialogue with pop culture, because like, in the sense that I understand it works in a level that the machine, you know, the propaganda machine and the machine of society works, in a way. So understanding how it works and being able to be in dialogue with it is important. I think it's difficult to shut oneself out from the machine that is working, because then we'll just become marginalized. But when we become in dialogue with it, and the more we're in dialogue with the primary mechanism of our society, which ultimately is culture and pop culture and, the kind of mechanisms around that, and then we'll be able to understand how it works and be able to subvert it, subversion of its intention, which is to, kind of make people sublimate their emotions. But we can kind of create a way in which we can be in dialogue with it to do its opposite of what its intention is.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's a nice option to have.
Yeah.
And do you have any poems handy?
Yeah, I have so many, but I'll read one poem, I guess, because we have limited time. I'm trying to see what the best. I had selected a poem. The body is a garden. It's an interesting meditation I wrote that I'd like to share with you and the audience.
Excellent. I would love it.
This body is a garden. There are perennials growing in my perineum. There are roses crowding up my brain. The lily is entwined with my chest hair, leaving my hands tied up in the daisy chain. While daffodils multiply in my bowels, the tomatoes are plucked ripe for my spine. Asparagus is growing from my testes, above legs of corn stalks harvested in a line.
I love it. And which book, is that a new piece or is that already published?
That's published in Breakdown Dancer.
Breakdown Dancer. And if anybody wants to pick up one of these.
It's all available on most online retailers. You can look up on Amazon or Barnes & Noble's or the various other retailers. My name, VGR Nathan. Or you look up Postscreens Press, postscreens.org. They have a link to the direct link to the book, as well as vgrnathan.com. I believe I have a link to the books there. You can look them up online. Otherwise, I also have I have a PDF of Escape from Samsara available for viewing on my website. If you like, just add some sample poems on vgrnathan.com.
And let me spell for people. That'd be VIJAYRNATHAN.
Correct. Yeah. Thank you.
Excellent. No problem. So we have maybe about 5 minutes or so. This is a fascinating conversation. We're going to have you on again, VJ. This is great. I'm loving it. When you were younger, did you have other people in your life that turned you on to this, maybe within your family, your neighborhood? When I say this, I don't mean just poetry. I mean, Eastern thought, Buddhism, or did you find it in college? And where do you think it's going to take you?
Yeah, I mean, my parents were interested in followers of Sathya Sai Baba, who was a guru in India in the 70s and 80s. He was born in 50s or 40s, but then he died in 2012 or 2011. He was a guru who preached unity of all religions, and he was a Hindu. Ultimately, he was Vedantic or Hindu philosopher being. I became kind of disillusioned with that, with kind of the Hindu philosophy, and turned towards a more Western presentation. I looked through a lot of different schools and. I discovered New Kadampa tradition, which is a tradition in New York City and all over the world, really, established by Geshe Kelsen Gyatso, who gives these teachings on Mahayana Buddhism for modern Buddhism for general people in the modern times. And I really attached on to that. I learned so much from that. And then now with Naropa, I'm learning so much from their tradition. And yeah, I think that was those are the main vehicles upon which I built my tradition. Also, I went to Catholic school for a long time, and I do appreciate the Christian and the the traditions around that and around the Vedantic tradition, all this kind of stuff, all the intersections of all the religions. I appreciate it. And ultimately, it comes down to is my own personal experience, which is what's most important, and how I digest daily life in regards to the goal of, you know, alignment, wholeness, individuation. So,
and that leads me to this question, you know, and maybe it'll be the last question for this conversation, though. Again, we're going to have more in the future.
Thank you.
Where do you hope all of this will take you? You know, what, when you look at yourself as a citizen in this country, the United States of America, you see what's going on in our country, you see what's going on internationally. Are you hopeful about our species? Are you hopeful about human society? Is this path you're on a means by which you think you could transcend or help, you know, get away from the ills, or maybe help cultivate a healing?
Yeah, it's so interesting because in Buddhism, they have the idea of the solitary attainer and the bodhisattva, which is the two paths of Mahayana and Hinayana, Hinayana being the solitary hearer, and Mahayana being the bodhisattva. So, you know, ultimately everything is a story that you're telling yourself, that that the world is at risk, that the world's going down, all this kind of thing, or the world's gonna end, all this kind of, it's all a story. So ultimately what we have to do is align within one's own psyche, one's intention, one's energies. Only then can we start to do healing with one, within oneself and within one's own environment, and ultimately kind of trust that that ripple effect will kind of touch people on a heart-to-heart basis. So I don't think, I try not to get myself too wrapped up in the political narrative, in the sense of like the world's trajectory, or these are all kind of abstractions in some ways, in my opinion. So ultimately what the concreteness of my experience is that I'm here to make heart-to-heart connections with my environment and with myself and with my environment, and ultimately that I just trust the process, that it'll happen, that things will happen, things will manifest. And of course we have a vision for the future, but that's a whole another conversation for oneself and for the world. But I try to keep myself open to the possibilities.
And ultimately it sounds, you're, I don't know if hope is the right word.
Yeah, hopeful, yeah.
You're hopeful.
Yeah, trusting, yeah.
Trusting.
But, yeah, trusting, because it's not a future attainment. Right now, right here, things are good. Things are, we have what we need in the sense of abundance, coming to a place of abundance, coming to a place of security, coming to a place of being enough, being full, being satisfied, whatever the exterior circumstances are, we have to come from a place of wholeness. Otherwise, we'll always be chasing after the next thing, the next, you know, attainment, you know?
Oh, I do. But let's say you were in Kyiv, you know, somewhere in the Ukraine, getting attacked by the Russians. How do you think that would affect your state of mind?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I think that when there's a degree of which we have to take action around protecting ourselves, protecting our community, protecting our our physical well-being, our body, our like a Maslowian kind of hierarchy of needs. Mm-hmm. We have to address that. But then if I know a lot of people who are living there, who are living their lives, who are not directly affected, but not engaging in a kind of, you know, we have to do what we can. You know, we have to do what we do, what we can, what we're called to do. And knowing that pivot line between what we're called to genuinely and what, you know, kind of, you know, what to protect ourselves, protect our communities, and what is kind of what we have to say, what I have to just continue my life and try to do the best I can. You know, so even for people living there, I'm sure people, not everyone is, from my understanding, not everyone is directly affected, but some people, of course, have to take priority to, you know, protect themselves. Yeah.
Yeah. It's oftentimes to me very perplexing and a little disheartening that we make so much trouble that does not need to be there. But, you know, then again, maybe I'm oversimplifying things. But talking with you has given me some trust, some faith, some hope, and has definitely motivated and inspired. So thank you so much, Vijay.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. Thank you so much for this conversation.
Oh, it was wonderful. We'll talk with you again. Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Doctor, let me tell you something about myself. I'm a college man and I'm very wealthy. I got no time to trifle with trash like you. Cause I must be about my business. Brother's a machinist in a textile mill. Make more money than you ever will. Just got married to a Polish girl. Space between her teeth. Sisters a dance up in Baltimore. Small cafe on me. She run off a Negro from the Eastern Shore. Doctors didn't even know his name. Get me back on my feet again. Back on my feet again. Open the door, set me free. Get me back on my feet again. Took her down to Mobile on a railroad train. Said, driver, take me to the Hotel Paris. Went into a washroom, washed his face and hands. He come out, he was white as you or me. He said, girl, I ain't a Negro, I'm a millionaire. As you can plainly see. So many women were after my money. Proud to say that you were only after me. Gonna teach you to play polo and how to water ski. To be a Negro from the Eastern Shore. Get me back on my feet again. Back on my feet again. Open the door, set me free. Get me back on my feet again. Doctor, doctor, what you say? Let me out today. There ain't no reason for me to stay. Everybody's so far away. Get me back on my feet again. Back on my feet again. Open the door, set me free. Get me back on my feet again.
And now, an excerpt from an article titled Heroes, written by David Remnick for the May 9th, 2022 edition of the New Yorker magazine. Just how unhappy political life has been in the United States was demonstrated recently in Lansing, Michigan, when Lana Theus, a Republican state senator, delivered an invocation in the legislature that melded the cadences of prayer with the lexicon of QAnon paranoia. Quote, "Dear Lord, across the country we're seeing in the news that our children are under attack, that there are forces that desire things for them other than what their parents would have them see and hear and know." End quote. State Senator Mallory McMorrow, a Democrat who represents Mitt Romney's hometown, understood that Theus was exploiting the occasion to call for a crackdown on teachers making any mention in the classroom of slavery, racism, or homosexuality. Michigan Republicans, like so many Republican lawmakers across the country, have been trying to foment moral panic in their constituents, In Lansing, they are eager to draft their own version of Florida's so-called Don't Say Gay law. McMorrow and two other Democrats walked out of the chamber in protest and expressed their dismay on social media. Not long afterward, Theis sent out a fundraising email that attacked her by name. Quote, "These are the people we are up against. Progressive social media trolls like Senator Mallory McMorrow, D. Snowflake, who are outraged they can't teach, can't groom and sexualize kindergartners, or that 8-year-olds are responsible for slavery." End quote. It was hard to know if Theis was speaking out of genuine conviction, careerist desperation, or both. She is facing a primary challenge from a Trump-endorsed candidate named Mike Detmer, who has said that voters should, quote, "be prepared to lock and load," end quote, at the polls. McMorrow, responding to Theis, gave a fierce and eloquent speech in the Senate chamber that made the case for decency and integrity in politics better than anything heard of late from a lectern in the District of Columbia. She denounced Theis's, quote, "hollow rhetoric" as an attack on, quote, "marginalized kids in the name of parental rights," end quote, and the phony culture war tactics in Michigan, and by inference, on the national scene as a diversion. Here's a bit of McMorrow's response. Quote, "People who are different are not the reason that our roads are in bad shape after decades of disinvestment, or that healthcare costs are too high, or that teachers are leaving the profession. I want every child in this state to feel seen, heard, and supported, not marginalized and targeted because they are not straight, white, and Christian. We cannot let hateful people tell you otherwise to scapegoat and deflect from the fact that they are not doing anything to fix the real issues that impact people's lives. And I know that hate will only win if people like me stand by and let it happen." End quote.
Where you going, my brown-eyed son? You used to crawl, but now you run. You started off on a road half dark, and the river curled into a question mark. We sleep on diamond beaches, dear, and drink from prison streams so clear. You don't have to be rich to get around. There are mansions growing out of the ground. Days go by, get out and see the world. Days go by, get out and see the world with your own eyes. Now the journey took you far from home, pushed you out of your comfort zone. There are kids out there with war paint on, and hearts break like crayons. Before you left, the world was small. Now the hills are bleeding like waterfalls. There are a lot of bad things that are buried shallow, and cries for help with no echo. Days go by, get out and see the world. Days go by, get out and see the world with your own eyes. It's hard to see what you're going through. No one can beat up on you. You'll spend some time in the waiting place.
A new birdbath, and it is whack. We got it from a big box hardware store with the same name as a theater chain that thrived in the earlier part of the 20th century. It cost $44 and some change. It holds water between two bushes on the front lawn just fine, surrounded by dandelion. I think the ornithals will like it. Episode 472 of Troubadours and Rock on Tours with yours truly, E.W. Conundrum Demure. I'd like to thank those folks who made this episode possible. First and foremost, V.J.R. Nathan, writer David Remnick, The New Yorker Magazine, Michigan State Senator Mallory McMorrow, and these musical artists: Thelonious Monk, Valerie June, James Maddock, Randy Newman, Brent Denon, Culture Abuse, Bradford Marsalis, and Terrence Blanchard II. And of course, as always, I would like to thank you for listening. Until next time, let's do our best and try to enjoy this time. Take care.